Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group. And today's guest has been a personal friend for years. In the Westchester County, has made huge impact as a superintendent, one of our national voices in education, whether it be through his work with AASA, whether it be through his work with the New York State affiliate of ALAS, or even just being an education friend, providing insight and recommendations to how do we navigate the turbulent times as executive leaders and even as cabinet leaders. So it is my honor to have my hermano, mi familia. Yes, I do speak Spanish, everybody. Dr. Ray Sanchez, who is the proud superintendent of Ossining Union Free School District in Ossining, New York. Yes, my brother from Westchester County. How are you today, Doc?
I'm doing great. Actually, I should say I'm not worthy, so I appreciate this opportunity. Highlighted in my calendar, really, really excited to be here with you, obviously.
Oh, man. And I tell you, you know, Dr. Ray Sanchez, he is he's a humorous brother. I'll tell you, me and him had some great conversations over the years. Was a core partner during my years as a chief academic officer and superintendent. And more importantly, we're continuing this work of how we can really look at providing equitable environments, not just to students that Ray is servicing in Ossining, but more importantly, the broader context of law. So glad to have you on here, Dr. Sanchez. Now, we're just going to have some fun, man. You know, just...
Right, I'm ready. Bring it.
Now, we're going to start the fun off with the first question, and I can't wait to hear this, right? So I want to know Dr. Sanchez's equity song. And what I mean by that is when education leaders learn about you, Dr. Sanchez, or engage with you at an AASA event, or just being superintendent of Ossining Union Free School District, what equity song comes to mind when they learn, hear, and engage Dr. Ray Sanchez in action?
That's a great question. And I'm going to go movie then song, but I'm a rock.
Easy. That's the first.
I enjoy the movie and I enjoy the whole series up to, you know, but the newest version of Creed. Eye of the Tiger is my song by Survivor. Our work has to be laser focus on our kids. I still remember that scene where Creed goes up to Rocky and tells him you need to have that look as he goes back into the ring with Clubber Lang. And that's what it's like to be an educator, really kind of not necessarily the fight, but really focusing on our kids and making sure that we do whatever it takes with a laser focus on what's best for each and individual child. That's my song. That's what my focus is. When I go into the ring and on behalf of kids, it's whatever it takes, taking down the barriers to make sure that all children have access and that all children have excellence as it relates to their pathway of education here in the Ossining School District, and hopefully helping others along the way to do the same.
Absolutely. You're more than helping and assisting Dr. Sanchez. And I'm just writing down and capturing all of the micro themes that make this macro theme, you know, of really having this focus on kids, laser-like focus on students. And your song, Eye of the Tiger, right? When you think about the depth, the breadth, the scope of the specific gaps that we are trying to address and accelerate growth in a variety of different ways in the education space, we have to have the Eye of the Tiger to be laser-like focus on our kids. I always say this, it turns a lot of people's, I should say, head or their hairs go up on their neck when you say this, but when you're doing this work, you have to love the students a little bit more than the adults. And obviously when we're in a service industry that provides we have to provide a service delivery model, it is the imperative that we have this laser-like focus or this eye on the tiger. But, you know, Creed, man, I thought you were talking about the younger Creed. I was getting ready, but you went to Apollo Creed with Clubber Lang. Oh, Dr. Sanchez,
I have to say, there's only one Creed, even though I know, but
Thank you.
They have to follow on
one Apollo. There is only one Apollo with that, and that a Clubber Lane. Wow, Mr. T. Anyways, that's a side conversation. But getting to the
next. You can just tell how often I've seen the movie, so just to give you a sense. I know the characters, their background, and everything. So, but you know what? It relates to our kids, right? Really understanding their story and understanding who they are. You know, their characters by name, but they have, you know, each has a story we got to tell and understand.
Absolutely. Rocky 1, 2, and 3 with Apollo. Yes, I love it. But you know the storyline behind it. But anyway, let me just get to the second question because we can talk about all the Rockies. I am a fan as well. But you're a well-respected superintendent in New York, Westchester County, and the United States. And you're an active leader in the New York State Association of Latino Administrators, as well as facilitating national sessions with AASA. But you're doing all of this and you're having a great impact in your district, Austining, as well as nationally. So can you just elaborate on some of the activities you're doing in your district as superintendent of Austining, and then also some of the broader activities at the state level with the New York State Association of Latino Administrators and Superintendents, and also let's include your national work with AASA.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been in the Austining School District 9 years. I've been actually been an educator in the Austining School for 20 plus years. I've been really honored to have been here both as a teacher and now as a superintendent. The work is ongoing. So we are, I'll just highlight a few of the, I think, transformational efforts that we're putting forth within our district. Just to give you a sense, we have about 60% of our students are living on free and reduced lunch. We're predominantly Latino as a school district, which is what I'll refer to as an anomaly within Westchester County. And so, you know, one of the things that we're constantly thinking about are not only just providing a great education for our students, but in order to do so, we also now need to meet and address fundamental needs of our families. So we're predominantly or really focused on our community school efforts. And that is really about making our schools the hub of resources and really the center of our community efforts, from school-based health centers to dental services, food. We have a place called O Prime, which for me, it's, you know, if you think about Amazon Prime, it's a play on words, but in essence, you need something, we're going to get it for you so that we can address those fundamental needs of all our families and so that our students are ready to learn when they enter our schools. Aside from that, we have, you know, we're continuing to provide what I refer to as excellent programs, from supporting dual language programs and bilingual efforts. One of the strongest assets we know our students enter with are that second language. So how do we enhance that and have them become bilingual, biliterate, and bicultural, which are really important values of our school district? We have a commitment to early childhood. We serve about 288 students. When we think about the achievement gap, you know, that we go back to Ron Ferguson's work, and he talks about the achievement gap, the language gap starting at 2 years old. So we're working to really make efforts and inroads to reach all our children and their families at an early age. And early childhood is critically important to us. And then we move through our system. And I'm really proud of all the educators we had out doing the work, from college level courses to, you know, award-winning science program. Many years ago, we had we were named number one for math and science by Intel. For our efforts in science education. So we really try to provide a robust program for all our students. We want them to do well academically, but the arts, the athletics, the extracurricular activities are extremely valuable. And that's the effort. We're continuously growing, building partnerships within the context of our schools. And the partnerships have really leveraged a lot of our efforts, quite honestly. And then as it relates to New York ALAS, I've been very, very fortunate to work alongside some esteemed colleagues and really helping to support Latino leaders in our area, and specifically New York. I have fortunate enough to support the Lower Hudson region, which brings together, quite honestly, we want them to network. There's this phrase that we use often, and I've taken it from a colleague, that iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the goal is to bring in all these great educators to support them, learn from different ideas that they may have so that we can all grow stronger in our efforts in support of children. So that's some of the efforts we're putting forth. We provide some networking meetings. We've been doing some learning sessions around equity. But more importantly than anything else, we're hoping to foster greater relationships, particularly around our Latino leaders and leaders in a broader sense. The title is not necessarily the most important aspect. We're all leading work in various ways, and we all have a sphere of influence. So that is, you know, the kind of spaces that we're trying to provide, and vulnerable spaces as well, to talk about our challenges as a whole. And then at the, you know, the, as we talk about AASA, continuing to support the national work, the organization is outstanding. It's powerful. You know that as well. And in any way, both small and large, if I can be supportive in representing our New York voice, but also supporting the national agenda around public education, and I need to be there to help support everybody. And currently our president's from New York, and our incoming president is from New York as well. So helping them in that transition, and again, in support of our national agenda.
Yeah, and Dr. Sanchez, thank you for your work, because when I scaffold your work into tiers, right, district, state, and national work, there's that vertical throughput that states that your voice is at the table. And I know the vitality, the rigor that you're bringing to the table at the national level, at the state level, and then more importantly, that work being implemented into outputs, you know, for students and for kids. I love how, you know my personal bias about early childhood education. When you're underscoring Ronald Ferguson work around the language gap, you know, coupling that with the Hart and Reese study with regards to the word gap, that is highlighting that, you know, there should be a critical emphasis while closing the preparation gap. You know, you and I have many of conversations about this, where the achievement gap is a symptom where the true root cause is what you just highlighted, the language and the word gap that we must intentionally close. Then we can be able to address some of the major quandaries that we're facing with regards to early literacy attainment, as well as even deeper level of comprehension skills. Because again, you know, I've been saying this for about 5 or 6 years. You heard I've been screaming this on the mountaintop. We close the language and the word gap simultaneously from birth to 3. Dr. Ferguson's work started at 2. And then also really that rich dialogue and the introduction of words and reading to that, we can be able to close all achievement gaps by grade 1, because why the gap is closed, but obviously we still have to provide interventions to provide a less of a cadre of students. But you're absolutely correct with that. Admire your work for the New York ALAS, what you're doing in the Lower Hudson region. Can't wait to see you soon at your regional event, because I really want to. It's a cameo. It's a cameo. And then again, your work at ALAS, at AASA, it's just astounding. So keep asking those hard questions, Dr. Sanchez, because you certainly present them. And then also, I love that context or that phrase of excellent programming and community school efforts. And I think that it goes to this question right now. Nice little segue into it, where the current state of education, there's this high volatility, right? Volatile in the multiple dimensions of the ecosystem and within our model. But I really love your creative approach. You kind of elaborated on it with regards to community school efforts and excellent programming. But you're taking a creative approach to include the voices of the stakeholders and your constituents to continuously be iterative in the AC stage of education for all. Very arduous, right? You have to be really strategic. And I like to say it's a science and an art simultaneously, that you're integrating or interfacing with both. But how did you take, you know, some of the most controversial topics in education to leverage equity and excellence in your district, that it just seems so seamless?
Yeah, so let me just say a little bit about that word seamless. It's here that way, but there are doesn't come without its own challenges. And but clearly, like anything else, even with an implementation dip or anything else, you want to level it off and make sure that ultimately it doesn't impact the kids that you're working with. And more importantly, that it positively impacts the kids you're working with. I'll just share this. A couple things is that within the context of my school district, that one of the things that I feel very privileged to work in a setting like Gosling is because the equity work has started even prior to my arrival. And so there's an element as a leader that we have to recognize and honor the history of a community or a school district upon entering. And there was a significant amount of work to set the right culture for doing the work that I have the honor to do currently. So we've had a district that moved to a Princeton plan, which, you know, was an effort years ago in the early 70s, late 60s to desegregate our schools. This community was at the forefront of that. They spent 2 years studying the achievement gap. They had Pedro Nogueira come in with Eddie, like a who's who, Eddie Fergus, Yolanda Seely Ruiz, to study our high school and to provide us recommendations. So I share that because I honor that in terms of some of the work that's been provided and kind of gives me sort of a baseline, a very strong baseline and a foundation to move the efforts going forward. You know, this community is not new to the work. We're just trying to elevate the work as we go forward. But, you know, the other part of it that you reference is like, how do we go about doing this is, you know, data tells you a story. And whether it's quantitative, which is one story, but really trying to elevate the voices of our children have been really critical in our efforts. Our students need those spaces and we work hard to provide them those spaces to talk about their experiences, where we need to move our efforts and help supporting them. And I would say that's been our greatest leverage is to have our voices, our children speak to us about their educational experiences and where we continually move. So just to give you a couple examples, like we have our students, there is a club that we've created to have a voice and garner the voices of our student body in terms of potential courses that we might offer. And some of the courses that we've had from fashion to some courses that center around race have been developed through the voices of our students. And we're going to continue doing that. And that's actually going down all the way down to our elementary grades through the high school, because oftentimes we think about our secondary students. And so, you know, the last part I would say, so it's data, the voices of our students, and lastly, making sure that throughout this, you know, that we are consistent in our message and work with our staff and our community. This is what we are. We are a district that focuses on equity. We're seeking excellence for all our students. And when our data tells us a story, whether, again, the voice of our students or other, we need to put our efforts forward. And the conversation is equity, making sure that our programs, we talk about this often. We don't need to have students fit our programs. We need to work to center and create programs that meet the needs of students. So that's a constant transformation and evolution that needs to exist. And I think you illustrated it exceptionally well in your book. Like, this is that next stage, right? Our kids are coming back from a pandemic. We have opportunity in that as well to shift the paradigm as it relates to education. And so, you know, the phrase is never let a good crisis go to waste. This is, you know, that was the ultimate crisis, but we have an opportunity now and we know a lot about our kids. And we need to continue to evolve as school systems and we're making efforts. We're not perfect in that, but you know, I got a strong team around. It's a great community, strong school board, and those are all, you know, the right ingredients for success.
Absolutely. And you're doing it with a high level of success, Dr. Sanchez. And, you know, you are the second superintendent, right? I'm a proud New Yorker, not Westchester County or New York City. You know, I'm up there a little.
I heard.
A proud New Yorker. And to hear the second superintendent from New York, Dr. Lovell Brown, both of you stated honoring the past, right? Honoring the history before, and for you to, you know, put it in that contextual phrase where, you know, you talk about the history and how you're elevating, right? This 2.0 of you're elevating your community voices with students, right? Student voice, student agency is so critical. We hear adults talk on and on and on in this kind of like this cyclical manner where there really isn't any reciprocity for our students because it's all adult focused, all adult centric. Right. Now you're disrupting a model where our students, the voices of our elementary, middle, and high school students are included in the design. And I love how you said the design is iterative, right? And always the conversation is around equity. This whole thing, and I want you to elaborate on this for a little bit, right? A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Barack Obama, I love you. And when he said that, a lot of people are like, ooh, jumped up, but you're right. But now when we're in this AC stage of education, right? And when I think about it holistically, it is this polarity or trying to find this punctuated equilibrium between opportunity and challenge. I want you to elaborate on that because you've done a lot of things. We're looking at challenge, turning challenges into opportunities and looking at opportunities to expand for all. A lot of superintendents might have a hard time balancing that opportunity challenge equilibrium. Can you elaborate? How did you do that in a practitioner standpoint?
Yeah, that's a great question because it's like I've referenced before, this is all a work in progress and not without its bumps. You know, it's bringing the individuals to the table, the important individuals, meaning our staff, elevating their voice, sharing what that means in terms of what their experience and the experiences of our kids are, and honoring what they're doing in the classroom and where changes need to make, and hopefully providing them the right supports to make that work on their behalf, and then measuring it, of course, you know, making sure that that's actually leading to results, whatever the results that were intended. But when we talk about a crisis, like there's an element here, right? There's a potential to accelerate some of the change process in this, and I think those are things that we need to think about as we move forward or in that specific time where we might be experiencing that said crisis. Where are those elements to accelerate some of that change process? Because change is hard, right? It takes time. And you want to bring people along as it relates to that. But there are those times, and I think we're in one of those moments, where we can start to leverage the need to elevate and perhaps evolve, make our school systems change in such a way that better meets the needs of our children. Not disrespecting what's happening in the past, but honoring that. But now we know our students are what I'll refer to, they've gone through a lot, so have adults. And there are some elements that, you know, we've cautiously tried to understand that we've had on the table in conversations, and now the why is just elevated even further. And so we need to, you know, start providing those resources and a roadmap to make these things happen. And so those are just some of the things that we work on to make, you know, again, it's the staff voice, but then also in many cases, they're not new things. They're just things that we just need to now accelerate in such a way that's going to benefit our kids in a positive light.
Absolutely. Well framed, Dr. Sanchez. Well framed. To my audience, please, you know, using this as an asynchronous mechanism for professional learning, to target specific strategies that could be implemented and aligned into your organizational strategy or culture, please rewind that statement or the sentiments that Dr. Sanchez provided to you, because there are multiple, whether it be evidence-based practices or empirical threads that can be applied universally in a multitude of different ways. So thank you for that answer, that two-part answer, I should say. And moving into now, this is more of a reflection question, right? Because I want, you know, we have a lot of aspiring superintendents. We have a lot of executive leaders who tune it to VFV. And the people you mentored, right, could be on the show listening right now because they know you provide great leadership strategies, right, within the build. You are, you know, I like to say you just hand them out, right? You hand out strategies, you hand out advice, you know, you just always, Dr. Sanchez is always providing somebody something. So I'm going to ask you a question that will have you reflect as a mentor, right? And this is pretty much just an open forum to see how Dr. Sanchez reflects for growth in the AC stage of education. So in this new stage, or even I like to say phase within the paradigm, what would you do differently to help aspiring superintendents or new leaders join this coalition of urgency for change in the AC stage of education?
There are elements that have changed, and there's some things that I wouldn't, mm-hmm. right? I need to say this out loud, that I think in this AC stage that you referenced, that it's in the BC stage and the AC stage where the importance of coalitions are really, really important.
Yes.
The importance of partnerships. You should, no matter what, I would not change the aspect that we should not be doing this alone.
Absolutely.
And that there is power in reaching out and doing this as part of a collective group of superintendents, partnerships with school districts, and learning from each other. I used a phrase that that iron sharpens iron, right? And I used it often, a colleague of mine referenced, and it's just stuck with me. Because to do the work and the important work that we're involved in, and it's getting harder. Let's just say it out loud. It's getting more and more challenging. The uniqueness of our roles and what we're doing as educators from a health and safety perspective, from a general safety perspective to the social emotional needs, it's complex work. To do it right, I would say. It is complex work. So this the element of making sure that you reach out and that you do this in partnership with others, whether it's in your district or other, you need to really be considering that at all times. I am better because of individuals like you, Michael, because of colleagues that I've been able to reach out to do the hard work on behalf of kids. Sometimes it's challenging, but being able to reach out to individuals that you admire and that are always willing to give you the feedback is really, really critical. And so that's never changed. And I need to just say that out loud to, you know, those that are listening is it's like a, you know, a message from a good book. Just keep going back to it. That chapter is going to stay true and seminal piece. What I would say is different and what I would share with everyone too is that to do the work, you also need to take care of yourself. And I haven't messaged that enough within my, you know, those that I mentor and have opportunities to is, you know, we need to provide that space for us to really take care of ourselves. So, because it's, I mean, we're just coming back from a break, you know, here in New York. Mm-hmm. And I see the difference in the educators that are here. It's noticeable, it's palpable, quite honestly. They're ready, more ready. And so we need to take those moments. And I think I would probably elevate some of that as it relates to our efforts. And lastly, I think we alluded to it before, just know your history.
Absolutely.
Know your history, know what you're walking into. Change is a process. We got to work with urgency, but we also have to have a level of patience in the things that we're doing, and never lose your focus, which again is always about the kids.
Yeah, that's that, Dr. Sanchez. You just characterized good leadership. That's just good leadership right there, which you just highlighted. You know, to be able to really manage right all of those variables, a variety of different variables. I'm looking at this now, but you always reference back to the critical essential, right? The fundamentals of, you know, really the importance of coalitions and power and partnerships, but the power of the collection. Wow. Power of the collection. I think we work in such an isolated manner that sometimes we even forget to even reach out to people. And that's why, Ray, you know, building on shoulders, right? And you're building your own shoulders as somebody else or many more individuals in this world will be able to lean on and stand on. So thank you for that.
Yeah, if I can just add, Michael, I think there's great examples. And, you know, said it twice. I complimented you twice. This is going to be my third. Like these podcasts, I've listened to all your podcasts. They're extremely helpful to me, right? When I think I'm one superintendent that has the honor to serve the Ossing School District. But the national voices you're bringing, I'll be, you know, one from New York now too. but I get the opportunity to hear from others that are, we're all doing the work, right? We have the honor of supporting this geographic location with our schools centered around it, but we're all in it for kids. And so, you know, it's these spaces plus the ones that we have with our colleagues that cannot be lost. And we should not be thinking about this as work we're doing alone. We're all in this on behalf of kids. And this isn't a competitive game. This is about making sure that we all succeed in our efforts on behalf of kids. Like I want every district that is surrounding me to do well.
Yeah.
And clearly I want the kids in Ossing to do well as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And Dr. Sanchez, thank you, man, because literally
commercial.
coming, this is the commercial now, because I mean, because honestly, you know, the words coming from you, really a national spokesperson about change and about doing the real work, and having you say that about me. My brother, like I said, I've been wanting to shut down after every participant say something. I just wanted to shut it down. I was like, I'm not going to say it, but you said it for the third time. I was like, I got to shut this down. No more Dr. Sanchez. That's where it is. But my brother, I appreciate you. You know, I love you dearly. We've been, you know, back and forth years with strategies, ideas, bouncing back. And even when I made this transition, a lot of people don't know, but, you know, at the early onset of this, you were one of the first people to call. And Ray, I will always remember that and appreciate you for that. So, you know, publicly, I want to say thank you for that. And so moving on to the next question. So now my book, right? And I love how you read it. I love how, you know, you send your text messages. I love it, my brother. But
I reread it. That's bad. Like to frame it.
I love it, man. Thank you. Intentional, bold and unapologetic, right? A guide to transforming schools in the AC stage of education. I advocate for innovation, right? That innovation is that input driver that will elevate excellence and equity in teaching and learning organizations. It's fundamentally made to force people to look at the education model differently, where I'm going to use your words, it acknowledges the history at the outset, right? The BC stage of education and the development and confrontation of the military model or the industrial model. But when we look at this, right, with the need to change the core of the model, how do we now start to memorialize, or how do you memorialize innovation as a primary driver for excellence and equity in your district as a leader?
Well, when I think of innovation, to me, it's this constant evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our
time, Dr. Sanchez, because that is the definition of innovation. Just repeat that one more time. I apologize.
Yeah. No, I think it's, you know, I think it's about an evolution of our work. And so we're continuously, whether it's in formal leadership meetings and our board meetings and in our spaces with our educators at the building level and with our communities, continuously asking us that question. And if it's not, then it's incumbent upon us to make some changes. And change doesn't necessarily have to be dramatic, where it doesn't mean we're building new buildings or, you know, we're going one-to-one on in these, you know, I'll just refer to more of like the technical items, but could be more adaptive in our work, right? And those are the change of mindsets and beliefs that we're, you know, grappling with sometimes. But it's continuous and making sure that it's part of your agenda on an ongoing basis. If we don't innovate, I think we're generally doing a disservice to our children.
Absolutely.
We may not be providing the best possible education for the students that we have the honor to serve, no matter what the location is, because it is an honor to serve children.
Absolutely.
And so that dialogue has to be continuous. It has to be part of your table on an ongoing basis. And that could be looked at through the lens of, I referenced it before, you know, your data, your student voices and others to say, it's time for movement. And some of that, like we just referenced a minute ago, it could be small changes. Those small changes can be so impactful in the lives of children and staff. And so it's ongoing spaces where there's psychological safety to bring them up, that everyone has a seat at the table in providing those fresh ideas. And know that all ideas, irrespective of your title, should be honored and thought through. Some of the where individuals have looked to, and you know, sometimes superintendents were looked to for all the greatest and brightest ideas. They don't come from necessarily just superintendent. We got to provide the space for them, for our staff and the educators in our communities to share those ideas. And I've heard some really outstanding ideas from individuals that may not have the certification as a teacher and have really had positive impact on our students. I think back to efforts that this district took on prior to President Obama, you know, giving us the charge around MBK, my brother's keeper. We had a program called Project Earthquake, and that came from a real one of our videographers that said, we got to do something to better educate our Black males in our school district. That idea lifted this district and really made concerted efforts on behalf of our young men. That didn't come from the superintendent. It didn't come from the building principal. It came from someone that had a moral imperative that says, I got a great idea. And we got out of his way and made sure that that just that happened. And it did. And it happened really well. So I used this as a, like a small but I think impactful example of innovation that happened, you know, on our behalf. But again, just noting the fact that it can happen anywhere. And it's making sure we have that space and also that psychological safety for everyone to be able to come to the table and share their ideas.
Absolutely. And Dr. Sanchez, the rationale I had you repeat that definition of innovation is because you hear, just like with rigor, when, you know, we started looking at or examining tier one or even tier one, the multiple tiers within the multi-tier system of support, even to the level of direct instruction as traditional pedagogy is being delivered, rigor, where you had about 45, 50 different definitions of rigor, and I'm
using
number in a hypothetical sense. But when you talk about innovation, you start to see that emulation on the definition of rigor being, you know, having a variety of different meanings, same thing for innovation, but innovation is the evolution of your model through a variety of different ideas. If you think about, you know, when we talk about it from the the business science space, right? And the evolution of emergent practices in business science, we get design thinking. And the first pillar, I should say, or the first frame within design thinking is what, right? Customer-centric ideas that we take from our customers to be able to generate a prototype, or whether it be a minimal viable product. I'm using very technical terms, but bringing it back to the education sense, yes, getting ideas from the crowd, our constituents, our students, our families, and even our stakeholders, and giving them the space, as Dr. Sanchez stated, to elevate that innovation into this level of a creative output that's going to impact students and families. Unbelievable about that. And this is another side variant before we get to the last question, because I really want to highlight on this. That first principle of design thinking, right, is empathy. And when you look at it from a customer-centric lens, right, empathy, we use it in a context, a contextual frame that we can talk about it, but how do we conceptualize it as a practice within design thinking and having that be an integral part within the actual redesign or the innovation or the evolution of the model? Briefly, Dr. Sanchez, how do you leverage that first element of empathy? It's hard for a lot of leaders to say, yeah, we can do that, but they don't. How do we do that and incorporate that as a mindset shift?
Well, what I would share with you is that sometimes we go to the space of sympathy. Empathy. I would just generally say, I don't need your sympathy. I need your empathy, right? And really understanding the lived experiences of the individuals, whether it's your staff and your students.
Yeah.
That's your starting point, quite honestly, and bringing about the work. But I, you know, I may sound like a broken record, but the work isn't that complex in some cases. Yeah. It's providing that space and making sure that this is your ongoing work, whether it's in your meetings and the tenor and culture that you're helping to create, and providing that space for everybody. That's, for me, it's that simple, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And reiterating, because I do want to distinguish this, because you're right about design thinking and the element of empathy. But I think there are times as educators that we lead to sympathy. And I think there is a clear distinction between. I think sympathy is deficit in its model and its perspective. Empathy is not. And we need to kind of pause and remind ourselves, even in dialogue that we might be having with others, in Spanish, and I'll just use... I don't need the pobrecito syndrome, right?
Yes.
I need to understand where I'm coming from and then work to create opportunities for me in my school and my learning set. That's who I was as a child. You know, my first generation came from from some significant challenges. What I didn't need, once again, is pobrecito syndrome. I came in with assets and understanding and elevating those, but give me the opportunities that everyone has, knowing my story.
Yeah, Dr. Sanchez, thank you for providing that distinction, that categorical distinction between sympathy and empathy. My audience, please, this is a second answer. You have to replay, you have to rewind, play it again, because there are distinctions between sympathy and empathy. You brought back the comparison of Martin Haberman's work, Dr. Sanchez, where is pedagogy of poverty versus the pedagogy of prosperity, right? And that clearly those two are distinctively different. Same thing when we talk about sympathy and empathy. Thank you for bringing that up. Very, very important. I could talk to you all day, Ray, but I got a last question. I don't even want to end this conversation, to be frank with you, brother, but last question. I know you got to go be superintendent. What three words do you want our audience to leave with regarding persistence in a rapidly changing time, right? Times are changing. You know, there are many compelling factors impacting education today, but what three words would you want our audience or my audience to leave with when we talk about persistence in the AC stage of education, when there's this high level of reactivity for change? And you so could go
mostly on words, because I'm going to do, if it's okay, I'm going to slightly edit, because it's hard to, so I'll use a phrase and in one case and maybe some words after. So,
but Dr. Sanchez, let me really fast, because you're going to laugh at this. So I'm trying to switch up my approach on question six. So, you know, I want to see now, I'm starting to, you know, I like to say iterate, right? I like to iterate now my question is structured, and you just came out. I did this deliberately with you, and you came out with it. I got words and a phrase. So I got to switch it up for my next episode. Go on.
I'm going to give you a homogeneous answer. I'm going to give you a heterogeneous answer here. So just diverse. So one is patience with urgency.
Yes.
Right. So I think in this stage of persistence and this need for rapid change, yeah, you have to be patient, yeah, but you have to work with urgency. Yeah. So, and I guess that counts as three words in some ways, right? So if we want to use the whole phrase, but I think there's elements of that. You know, I would just to elaborate a little bit, I'm not very patient at all, because I want it now, and I want it now for everybody. But I have to be patient, have to remind ourselves, but the urgency doesn't stop. That doesn't mean that we're not working hard and to try to bring about the positive changes. You said the other, you know, we talked at length about it just a minute ago, but I had in my mind the word empathy. Mm-hmm. I think we can't ignore that in our work. And the last one is, and I would just, it kind of relates to empathy, but I don't want to lose this word of love that we don't talk about often. Yes. You know, I've, full disclosure, I'm a big fan of Mr. Rogers. I grew up with Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. And he had this favorite number, which was the number 143. Are you familiar with the number?
No, please elaborate.
So he stood behind this number 143, because he reminds us that it only takes one letter to write the word I. Four letters to write the word love, and three letters to write the word you.
Wow.
And those messages resound for me in terms of, like, when we're working on behalf of children and working on behalf of a community and working just to make our world and our space better, at the core, love is necessary. And his words resound. I grew up on Mr. Rogers, and I didn't buy the red sweater, but... his words actually were really powerful. So, you know, for everyone that's listening, 143, you know, I need one letter for I, four letters for love, and three letters for you.
Hey, you exceeded the word limit, but I don't care. Because you know why? I don't care. Because
the phrase is in one word.
It, exactly. Because patience with urgency, yes and yes, right? Empathy, Absolutely. But love, people, we have to bring that back into education. We have to bring that back into education. And the whole 1-4-3, I love you thing. Yes, now I remember 1-4-3. Yes, this was college days, right?
Yeah.
But Dr. Sanchez, if I'm a veteran super, I'm a leader, principal, if I'm an aspiring superintendent, how would I be able to reach you just to be able to pick your brain or questions I might have regarding something I'm doing or implementing in my own district?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. It's Ossining Soup. And you can always reach out. You can reach to me on, you can email me. My email, my work email can be found right on our website. I'm happy to connect. And you can call my office. I'm happy to connect with you. If you say, hey, you know, I heard the podcast, wanted to chat with you for a little bit, I'm sure we'll connect. And to the extent that I could be helpful, I will. And that's what we're all here for, to help each other and get it, you know, grow and get better.
Absolutely. And to our audience participants out there, if you call Dr. Ray Sanchez, he will talk to you. If you email him, he will email you back. If he is busy in a meeting and you leave a message, he will call you back. That is my good friend. That is good leadership. That's his leadership signature, Dr. Ray Sanchez. Dr. Sanchez, you survived Voices for Excellence, my brother. How you feeling?
I got one drip of sweat coming down here, but I'm okay. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I thank you, Michael, for all the great work you're doing.
I appreciate you, Ray, and I can't wait to see. There is a Michael Connor sighting.
It's coming. It's coming.
It's coming. And everybody, be afraid. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.